Welcome inside the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship podcast. My name is Marshall Ferguson. As always, thanks for being here with us. Our second episode from Daytona. This time we're actually inside Daytona. Very exciting. Yesterday we were just prepping it, getting you set for the weekend at large. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to the Daytona 200 preview that we did with myself, Colin Fraser, Cam Bickle. Right now it is Colin Fraser and it is Team Battle Axe rider number 86. How does it feel to be running the 86 right now for you, Ben Young?
I actually just had an interview with some Bridgestone media guys, and you know, we were just saying that the number ones to me is always just borrowed or rented, right? So yeah, it's nice to have the 86 on this bike, and you know, obviously we want the number one, but you know, we've got a few steps to make for that one. Yep. But yeah, the 86 is nice, and it's always nice that your number's available as well when you come down here.
That's true. I know there's a lot of people here that are running a one or a two or a three or a seven in front of their actual number that they'd like to prefer, so good to have the 86 on for you. Before we get to your day at large here on the Thursday, first day on the track, I just want to ask you this Bridgestone setup. Like, you guys are obviously Team Battle Axe. You are the front-facing venue, if you will, of all things Bridgestone right now with their efforts at the Daytona 200. This is a pretty cool setup to just be in the paddock, be in the garage, and be able to hang out with everybody. That there's a ton of CSBK affiliations, obviously. There's other people, but you guys have a pretty unique setup with the Bridgestone massive truck right across the street as well here.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this is awesome. We've been kind of secluded from everybody else, which, you know, is a bit of a bummer. But at the same time, like, it's cool. Like, we're with all these Canadians. You know, it's, if you're, you know, you can't be in that, this is the other way you want to be. So right. To me, like, this is awesome. We have the big rig right across from us. You know, everybody's very accommodating to Bridgestone as is, and you know, and even more now because it's just us. You know, instead of a whole CSBK field, they just have 11 of us, plus the art guys on Bridgestone. So yeah, it's very one-on-one with them, which is awesome. And we can really focus on getting these bikes dialed in for the Daytona 200.
It was great to see you on the bike today. It was amazing to see you guys ripping around out there and climbing the banking and all the rest. And of course, the drafting, Colin, like we talked about in the preview episode, is so important. I found myself being fascinated both in practice and in qualifying one, just watching, okay, who are you riding with? Like, who is challenging? Who's pushing? Who's slowing down? There's so many mind games that go into this. I guess before we get into some of the specifics that Colin can ask you about as well, how would you characterize your day as a whole on the Thursday here at the Daytona 200?
Yeah, so like on my end of things, riding wise personally, great. I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. We're having some bike issues, unfortunately, and that, you know, we had them this morning. We thought we were fixed, but unfortunately, they're still lingering this afternoon with the brakes. So yeah, we're going to rebuild the whole brake system tonight. It's kind of an issue Trevor is having as well, so it must be something that we've maybe some modifications we've made. So we're going to try and sort that stuff out, and hopefully good for qualifying two tomorrow.
Colin, go ahead.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation when you're struggling with an issue. The question you'd like to ask is, what was it like around other people? Did you run with anyone and get a sense of their performance? But of course, if you're struggling with the brakes, it's not exactly a confidence builder.
No, for sure. This morning, more than ever, really, you know, I did some laps and I was like, I'm going quicker. And then I was looking at my lap times, I was like, I'm not. And then by that point, the brakes were in at the bar. So I came in and we tried to fix the situation. We actually got unfortunate, but there's a red flag, which we were able to help in our advantage to have time to work on the bike. So we managed to get it somewhat sorted, but only give us like two or three clear laps in before it was happening again. And again, unfortunately, it wasn't fixed for this afternoon session. But you know, all in all, when we were out there with the guys at the end of the day there, we felt super comfortable out there with Forrez, Cooper, PJ, Stefano, and yeah, I feel like we have good pace. I was quite surprised that our lap time when we came in, it wasn't where we would have liked to, considering I was hanging with those guys. But I think also a lot of it has to do is we did consistent lap times, a consistent low 51s. So although they may have went quicker, I'll need to look at the lap time sheet and do a kind of breakdown and see if they were running in the 51s, but they had one lap that was a mid 50. You know, that's the interesting part that we'll have to see.
So if you haven't been to Daytona, and of course most people haven't had the experience of racing a motorcycle, let alone at Daytona, unusual where you're in sixth gear for long periods of time, you know, at Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, we are in sixth gear, but we're going up a hill, and just when you're starting to get into the meat of it, you have to slow down again. Let the people know a little bit. A braking problem in turn one, you know, it's a very difficult turn coming out down the banking, hard to judge. And, of course, it's chicane. I mean, it's easy to judge, but everybody gets ambitious there. So what do you do when you're being careful, trying to figure out how much brake you have left?
Yeah, it's tough, and every lap's different with if you have a draft or not. It was hard. It was definitely braking a lot earlier than I would have liked to. And not so much, honestly, it wasn't that bad through one in the chicane. It was more the infield because it is such a short time to the braking zone. You can brake a lot earlier in one because there's room to brake, but through the infield, you only have so much room before, you know, from corner previous to the next corner. It's tough, but it's something that we've, you know, had to sort out. And again, it's not very confidence inspiring, but you just have to forget about these things, put your head down and go.
So we saw, for instance, some of the Vision Wheels M4, the Ulrich Suzukis. We're already starting to work together, coming out and finding each other and making an effort, and obviously have a plan. It's not spontaneous. They have a goal. Would that be what you'd want to do, or are you just, as with last year, just looking for someone, you just happen to be at the right place at the right time?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of right place at right time for me, or as it always has been, because I've never had a teammate here. We'll see. I've been very fortunate the two sessions to be out with guys, and it just so coincidentally had to be Forres and Richard Cooper both times, and then this afternoon one of the Yark guys was out there too. It's helpful, but at the same time also I found this afternoon is because there were so many of us, people were just stuffing each other and jamming up and end up going slower because we're not going, you know, they're checking up braking too much because, you know, some guy's trying to flex on another guy's out braking. Anyway, it was just like, how about, you know, in my head, I'm like, why aren't we all working together without saying let's work together, you know? So that was tough, especially when we had a fresh tire and ready to go and do, you know, ideally do a 50. But it's what it is, and fix these issues and we should be rolling good tomorrow.
You name dropped a couple of good bikes, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the benchmark bike leading into Generation 2 with the FIM rules is the R6, and those are probably some of the best R6s, and
yeah.
I think, you know, personally, I'm very interested in what the Triumph's capable of. Do you have any read on how those bikes were running?
The Triumph was very quick. It came by me very quickly. It's tough to say. Richard Cooper is very small, to say the least.
Colin showed me a picture, by the way, of Hickman and then a picture of Richard
difference.
Cooper. I was like, it's a completely different, it's three
100%.
Weight classes of boxing difference between the two of them.
I'd say Pete's very much your size, maybe a bit. You're definitely
broader.
leaner than he is for sure. But and Coops is, he's, I would think I'm maybe 3 inches taller than him, and there's nothing to him.
And do you know him from racing in the UK?
So I knew Pete. Spent a bit of time with him. We used to play motocross games in his camper van at the tracks. Used to goof off, and you know, at the end of the year, I think in 14 when I left, I stuck a sticker on his scooter, and then he didn't get it. He didn't see it until the March the next year because his scooter went away for the season, you know. But my teammate that year, Barry Burrell, who actually I met here in 2013 at the 200, he was good buddies with Pete, and actually good buddies with Coops as well. So spent more time with Pete. You know, I'd see Coops in the paddock if I was, you know, walking around with Baz, but so it's nice to see those guys, and as nice to see everybody, you know, coming down here, you know, somewhat inaugurally now, and seeing buddies that you don't keep in touch with, but yeah, it's different seeing them in person.
So let's ask you a big picture question. This is the third year of this configuration of the race. It's, I think, gathered a huge amount of momentum for a number of reasons. I think this race needs to be won by a non-American. I think that would be the thing that would push the agenda, build the event up. You know, everybody compares it
100%.
To 50 years ago. I have no idea who that is, but, you know, if you want to prove a race is international, you need to have international people succeed.
100%. It's, you know, you go through this entry list, and, it's pretty bummy to be down in, I think, 18th I ended up there, but at the same time, you look at the the leaderboard from this year to last year, the names in that, and even, you know, even not all the other guys, just think of, like, even just three names, Carl Haneke, Marvin Fritz, and Nicolò Canepa, just those three guys is, like, wild. And then you've got the Coupes, then you've got Hickman, you know, Heron, Superbike race winner, Superbike champion. He's stepped down, you know, or not stepped down, but he's doing the 200. Forez, World Superbike podium finisher.
Perez, all of the Australian, like.
It's like the list just, keeps going.
And what about the Ducatis? Because, you know, it used to be there were a couple of Ducatis and not always were they all running. We've talked a little bit about this in the Canadian scenario. But suddenly there's an armada of Ducatis from different teams, and all of them seem to be running really well. And those Rahal bikes look fantastic.
Yeah, there's you look at the list, and it's mostly littered with G6R750s or a V2.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, there's a handful of Triumphs, and then the rest, I'd say, are R60s. And, you know, and then, again, a handful of ZX6 Rs. But yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, honestly, this race, V2 could be the bike to be on as far as pit stop. A lot of the guys here are unfortunately limited with their crew. That's a perfect example that one guy could do a rear. You know, you're not messing around with chains, cush drives. It's just bolt off, bolt back on.
So what he's alluding to is single-sided swinger on the Ducati. So it is simpler and safer and therefore quicker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just a knot in the wheel. We're not trying to hook the chain back on,
right. Spin
it around and get a whole axle back through, right? So so that is has its advantages. You still need to mess around with the front, obviously. But on the other end of the thing too, with Forez being so dominant on that bike at the end of the year last year, there with the Mictronix electronics, they started to get a bit detuned.
And that of course is because of the way the FIM Gen 2 rules work, where
exactly.
They're actually tweaking those bikes.
Yeah.
And worth mentioning, the GSXR, although that bike similar to yours could compete in Europe, it currently doesn't. This is the place, and you know, I've gone on the record a little bit that looks like a really strong, you know, that the Ulrich team hasn't won, but particularly have looked good, and the people who are on them this year, and you know, Escalante, you know, if Heron was due, I think we could say maybe he's due now.
For sure, you look at the results of Q1, and it's I think it's Escalante, Ty Scott, and then Hayden Gillam.
Look at you, 3 for 3 without even looking at my piece of paper right now.
One of those things is not like the other. One of those guys is physically much larger.
Yeah.
Right. But this
I can't tell you who's in fourth though.
But this is the thing I wanted to point out, that you're talking about the Yamaha R6s, of course, and then when you're riding on a GSX R750, and then, you look at it, the Vision Wheel M4 X-Star Suzuki team, they had 3 of the top 4 in practice this morning. They've got the top 2 in Escalante and Tyler Scott. And through Q1 at this point, and he ended up having Brandon Pausch drop down. He was in 8th, I believe, at the end.
But
we don't
have any doubt that he is a competitive 100%. Guy in terms of the 200.
Right?
Again, it's one of those things that, you know, the outright pace is not, like, might not win you the race. Like,
right.
It's pit stops and consistency. And obviously, those guys have got a good crew and some good parts on the bike, courtesy of One Speed Inc. So it's
But this is my question is, and obviously you guys are going through what you're doing with the brakes, and you have to sort through that. But the fact that you've got that Suzuki team performing at such a high level here on day one, I would have to imagine that you on a Suzuki, you're like, if we get this straightened out and we get comfortable, like, why can we not run with these guys?
For sure, absolutely optimistic. And on the other side too, I believe we're like 0.7 or something away from the top Bridgestone guy. I'm not quite sure where Haneke. Yeah, 0.7 of a second. So we know there's time in the tires and over and beyond. Once we kind of figure out our chassis issues that we're also kind of having along with these this brake issues. I mean, chassis issues. I wouldn't say they're issues. They're just things we need to work on.
Let's touch on that. That's a terrific area, because most people wouldn't understand this. You know, this track is fairly old. The surface has 24-hour car races, so it's been beaten. It's a hard place for tires at the best of times, and typically no one has the feel for traction anywhere near what they'd like. And how much do you have to live with the reality of Daytona, and how much is we can dial this in if we get in front of the problem? I mean, and of course when you're struggling with other issues.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is tough. Day one here, and I don't know the last time this track was used. We know the 24-hour was a month ago.
Your road course is parking for the Daytona 500.
Parking for the 500 and Supercross as well was just here last week, and I'm sure they were parking out here as well. It definitely is a bit, you know, you never know. The good thing now, this being an open tire, it's not just going to be a Dunlop rubber laid out on the track that we, you know, last year there was just Ellie and I trying to lay down Bridgestone rubber. Now we have all these other guys, which is a huge help.
Well, let's ask that question, right? So that some people think rubber's rubber, and tire guys seem to think that the rubber you want is your rubber, right? Your brand is what's going to work for you. Do you weigh in on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this is as best as we're going to get it, being, you know, the more guys, the better. So I do feel that it is important that the rubber that's laid is what you're riding on. I spent some time, I did a support race 2014 Silverstone with MotoGP, and we would go out in Superstock and we were out running Metzler Pirellis, and you were like coated in I guess I don't even know what GP was running at the time like that.
Bridgestone, probably.
Yeah, we were just like, honestly, like almost eating the stuff. It was like under your helmet, like going down the back street, and they're like floating around just the way the wind baffles. And it's like, and it takes a while. Like you're cleaning the track and then coating your own. So yeah, I think it's important to have that. I did speak to a couple of guys. I do need to try and track down a Dunlop rider, but I got caught up with Danny Eslick, and he was saying he was having similar issues to me out of corner six, and he's on Pirellis. So that was quite interesting to know, but also reassuring to know that it's not just, you know, we're not having issues out of six. It's right. Kind of a common thing that people can't get traction. Going on with banking.
The thing that people always wonder about, obviously, with this race too, is the wear on the one side of the tire. What have you seen so far in terms of like what you guys will have for longevity? Because that pit window being the 18 to 20, 21 laps kind of thing, like it's everybody wants to know, with Bridgestone being here and having such a large force for the first time in a while, what do you believe that will hold up and look like on race day?
Yeah, so we went through this last year, thankfully, and you know we had we did two tires. Two rears and I believe one front. I can't remember if we changed the front in the first. We had no issues with it. We're actually running the same tire. And the beauty of this too is like this is a tire that we ride.
Yeah.
All these guys are here for the last time they rode this tire was here last year, or they were riding it at Roebling Road on 2 days ago, and it was like, oh, like had no feel on the left, and then the right they were fine, you know, because that's simply how the tire is built. It's just like rock hard left, right is as soft as you can get it, and we have the same tire as we are used to using, and it's the same both sides, so we know what we're getting. I'm quite happy with where we're at in that, and you know there's some guys talking of what their strategies are for the race. We're just going to do start two new, two each stop, and go on with it, because it's quicker to do the front than it is to do a rear. So you're going to be doing a rear regardless. It's going to be tough to do like 37, 38 laps on a rear. Like,
so
credit if they do.
You look at last year, red flag and then crazy sprint, aggressive drafting at the very front. And then you look at the year before that, and Patch made a big gamble and March soldiered his way up, and we're all trying to figure out, can he do it? Obviously, psychologically, what Patch did was remarkable. Do you look at that and go, I think I like that better?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he didn't tire up this last time, so that's ballsy. Like, that's like, especially at the end, because that's when you need it. But hey, like, they made it work. That bike was quick. So that also has an advantage. If you know you have that, then do you really need the grip if you have the banking speed? So, yeah, obviously the red flag last year wasn't an ideal situation. Unfortunately, I crashed, but, you know, that's just the mistake I made, and I know why I made it. It's just, and we move on from it. And I feel like the tires, if we are not allowed to do any tire changes during that period, is going to be good, because we know where the Bridgestone's at after a heat cycle versus what a Dunlop's like after a heat cycle. So, yeah, hopefully we don't come to that again, because that was a bit of a a gong show, as I guess the polite way of saying it. But they have the rule set for that scenario happens.
I don't want to keep you any longer because I know you've had a long day. You want to get some food in you. You want to go debrief, talk to a bunch of people. The most important question of the day, what's your trust level right now in your dad?
Trust in my dad. Well, you know, he has done some things in the past, like Calabogie a few years ago. I think it was the first round. He forgot to check the rear tire pressure, and I came in, and I was like, even Jordan Royds was like, dude, you almost like lost it like, to the moon. And I was like, yeah, like, don't know. And then came in, and then, yeah, tire pressure was like 40 PSI. So it took a bit of trust, and they come back from that one, but no, we're good. Dad's on the rear wheel.
Let's explain that. This all comes about because when you look at all the different tasks, and putting the fuel in is problematic, and the front is the brakes, but we still agree it's the rear wheel that is the risk region.
Yeah.
And the summary answer is your dad is the guy who is most trusted of the group, which...
No, for sure. And so 2012, first year we decided to do the Daytona 200. Kenny Reedman wasn't racing. Kenny Reedman and Roland Reedman came down to help us. And Kenny's like, do you have any worries? And I said, yeah, man, like, what if somebody just doesn't tighten the wheel up? And he's like, you know what, Ben? It doesn't matter if you're going 30 kilometers an hour out of the pit lane or you're going 230 on the banking. He says, like, you're f***ed anyway. Yes. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So I was just like, ugh. and there we go.
Amazing. Great mentality, especially when you're here at Daytona. It's been an eventful day one, Ben. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes to come hang out with us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Welcome back inside the, what are we calling this? Calling the Bridgestone paddock? What is it?
Yeah, this is the garages behind the pit lane, right? Yeah. They're NASCAR garages. That's what they call them. In NASCAR, the rules are you have to work beside the next team. So if you're wondering what they're doing, you just turn on your swivel chair and you look inside their fender after you're looking inside your fender. So it keeps things equal.
Well, two guys that were basically looking inside each other's fairings for the majority of qualifying one today. Maverick Sear joins us alongside Sebastian Tremblay. Guys, great day. Congratulations on everything that you're doing and chipping away. Did you guys talk to each other about strategy, about riding together, or did that just happen today? Because I saw you guys pretty close to each other for a big chunk of the day.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Quintessential Canadians getting out of each other's way.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, Seb.
It wasn't planned, but we've talked before, and it doesn't matter to us if we ride together. For sure, the draft here is a big thing, but mostly we're doing our own thing on the track. So whenever we're close together, we try to get an advantage from the other guys in front, but we're not playing around just trying to draft.
But did you feel more comfortable knowing that Sebastian was around? Because, again, knowing that it wasn't intentional, it's not like you guys were the Yart team from Europe or otherwise. But I saw those guys literally at various points. They would come off of turn two, look at each other, and go, okay, let's switch, right? And then they would group back up, and they would go onto the banking. They'd come around the next time through. Like, they were really, really scientific about the way that they were approaching some of their drafting strategies. But you must have felt a certain amount of comfort, because I'm always amazed, Maverick, at how aware you guys are of who is around you on the track.
Yeah, because I know Seb is super fast, so I was trying to get behind him to try to learn his line a bit, because I know he's going to have the right line here, because Seb is the shaker. So so I was just trying to have a wheel in front of me and just try to learn a bit more the track.
I did enjoy one time, Sebastian, where I saw you were at the back of a three-pack, and I believe Maverick was in the front of it, and I was standing with somebody up in the in between basically three and four there, two or three, I can't remember, and I basically just said, yeah, here, watch this, right? And you got on the back of the guy that was in front of you, blew past, and then I thought, he's going to just catch Maverick right away. And Mav, you held your own, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like the draft is extremely useful, as we've talked about, but at a certain point, you can kind of break it, and it felt like a lot of today was riders feeling out the dynamic of it and trying to understand, okay, at what point do I actually get that pull to drag me forward?
Yeah, exactly. It's something we're not used here in Canada, so we really have to, how can I say that, learn how to manage the draft, see how far it gets, how close you have to be to the bike in front to gain some speed and try to get an advantage out of it.
So an interesting question, and very specific to our group, is most of these guys have ridden at least a little bit. Some of them have been club racing at least once a month. We can't. Most of you haven't ridden since Shannonville. It's a long time ago. So it's been a winter, although not much snow. So you come here, and suddenly you're in sixth gear for a really long time, which is not something we ever do, right? We don't have those tracks. How long before your mind catches up, Maverick, before you're like, were you comfortable right away just being in top gear in the banking?
Yeah, riding at Jennings in the beginning of the week was good for me, because I was able to get my mind a bit like, oh, I gotta go fast. And getting on the banking again, we were there, me and Seb, last October, and it honestly felt unnatural to be here on the banking. So yeah, it was a bit of adaptation this morning. Unfortunately, I crashed, but I think that now I'm pretty comfortable on the banking.
And Seb, you your associate was congratulating you on your lines and whatnot. Do you ever get frustrated that everybody wants to follow you and see what your plan is?
Not really. Like, if they're able to follow me, like, good for them. Try to learn out of me. I won't say I'm retiring, but I'm pretty old compared to the other guys, so I have to be experienced in front, so it's all right for me.
And what about you in terms of the banking? Because, you know, some people would really just rather not have to deal with it. Some people start to get a buzz, right? They look forward to getting up there around other motorcycles. Where do you drift?
No, I like being on the banking and trying to see how you can have an advantage out of the banking as well. So really trying to focus on the precision of where you stand behind the rider in front to maximize your draft. And being leaned over on the banking is quite phenomenal.
So Maverick, have you had the time to like figure out where your head wants to be, where your arms and your knees go? Like, do you know this is the best way for me to do it?
Not yet. I thought I was good with my elbow, but my dad told me somebody watched me on the TV and texted him to tell me to bring my elbow more in. So I'll try to figure out more tomorrow how to place myself, but I'm feeling pretty comfortable on the bike.
And you're getting
classic golf narcs, like the people that called in and said, hey, that guy moved his golf ball at a PGA Tour event and they had to change the end of the tournament. People are calling in now? Calling in the ticks? That's not fair. That's not good for my man Maverick. Come on now.
you are now bigger than you were when we met you, and you're not just taller because you're growing up, but also you look like you're working out now.
Yeah.
So was that the plan for Daytona, to be fit for the 200 miles?
Yeah, I've trained a lot in the winter doing cardio and muscular exercise, so I could be stronger and can make it out until the 57 laps of the race, because it's a long race and we are not used to that in CSBK. We do a 12-10 lap race, so 57, it's a long way to go.
Now, Seb, what do you think? I know you used to work out a lot. I shouldn't have said it that way.
Sebastian, what happened?
Life happened.
No. I actually want to ask you this, just in terms of when you talk about being in sixth gear for so long, it is incredible to watch you guys go on that banking, and you think, okay, yeah, wow, the banking's crazy. And then you realize you're on the banking for 1-1,000, 5-1,000, 10-1,000. Okay, breaks into the chicane. Another 5-1,000, 6-1. Like, it is the exertion that must have for you, even when you're talking about your position on the bike, Maverick, to hold that position. The endurance aspect of this for you, I know that's what you were kind of getting at, Colin, is what does it feel like at this point in your career to be battling that for that length of time? Because I can't believe that you guys are able to just wear that in sixth gear for that period of time.
Yeah, it's not all that bad. It's not that much of a physical track. It's mostly like trying to be in the right position for that long. That's the problem. So we're not really exhausted out of it, but there's some cramp that can develop at some time during the race, I guess.
Well, I remember back in the day, you know, Miguel Duhamel, his complaint was that he had to take a very long airplane trip to Japan to get on his bike in a wind tunnel to spend the day to learn his positioning, where his arms, where his feet, where, how you turn your knees, how you get your elbows in. And then he had to fly home. It's a very long flight, you know. He was in business class, but still, it was very, very difficult, you know, to be a factory rider.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's awesome. Well, you guys, congratulations on a great day, Maverick. I know it was an adventurous one for you. I'm glad that your qualifying session was a little bit smoother. And it was fun as heck watching you guys rip around within the same vicinity of each other in the second session of the day. So good luck on Friday, and we look forward to talking to you later on in the week, okay?
Thank you very much.
You guys.
Thank you.
Ross Milson just walking away from us. Yeah, like, woo, Daytona.
Yeah.
He's been doing that, I think, about three times a day as it stands right now. So he's fired up, as are we, to have Brad McCray joining us here. Very, very exciting day for you. Learning, figuring it out on the fly, having some fun. What was your day like?
It was huge learning curve. First time here, so the first session kind of got stopped a couple times with a couple of red flags. But, yeah, we think we got 9 laps in the first session, and probably about the same the second. But it's quite a spot for sure.
The question, I guess, is like, what can you learn in 9 laps?
The layout, I guess. It's trying to entry points, braking markers, that kind of stuff. But it's a little bit overwhelming, but it's starting to come together.
Yeah. And the way that you pick up on, is it one little thing each lap that you're trying to remember? Because I find this intriguing of, okay, you're here, you're crash coursing in trying to understand Daytona, whether it's lines, breaking points, markers, whatever it might be. But how do you tuck one in your back pocket and go, okay, turn 6, I actually like what I did there. Because by the time you're thinking about turn 6, you're on the banking, Brad.
Yeah.
And then you're riding the banking for forever. And then you got to figure out where the breaking point is for the chicane. Then you got to figure out how to get out of the chicane, get back up on the banking. And it's like, by the time you come back around and it's turn 6, have you actually tucked it away and gone, oh, yeah, I remember doing this? Or is it just muscle memory?
It is muscle memory, I guess. But it's actually the banking. There's not a lot to it. So it gives you a little bit of time to think instead of just, you know, like a Shannonville or whatever. It's just one thing after another corner. But, you try to pick a braking marker, and it's like, I could probably go another 30 feet next time. And then, you try that next time. Or, say, corner 2, I'll try to hit the apex over here or run wide, you know. A lot of times you're, you know, trying to do it and it doesn't go as planned. But, I mean, yeah, it's starting to come together with, I guess, say 18 laps we do have today.
Right. And I see a whole host of people working on your bike over there. I know that everybody in this garage right now, and what we're calling the Bridgestone paddock, is trying to figure it out and manipulate some things, because I don't think there's just a single bike in here that didn't have something pop up today that it was like, okay, this can be better. We can tweak this. We can work on it. What is that for you right now that you feel like, okay, this is something we can work on to try and improve?
Well, same thing this morning at that little bit of time, or limited time, track time, I guess.
Right.
I was getting soft brakes again. Well, the second session, it was quite a bit worse. So I did probably, I'd say, 4 or 5 laps came in because I was my brake lever hitting the bar. They rebled it, got better. I think I got 2.5 to 3 laps again, and then same thing again. So we're going to try taking calipers off of my other bike. We have magnets in the pistons, and I think it's holding heat and maybe boiling the fluid. But yeah, some of that stuff. And then we're also doing changing body work. Matt Simpson was nice enough to lend us his spares. So here we are hitting that.
I was going to say, I'll throw it to Cam on this one, but I did enjoy when Cam alerted me earlier today. Hey, did you see the front fairing on McRae's bike? I'm like, no. So sure enough, I go out for the second session. I'm like, why is it blue?
Yeah, we were sitting there looking at pictures of Matt Simpson, and I'm thinking, that's not Matt Simpson. That's we tried to piece that one
Shout
together,
out to Matt Simpson's sponsors, who got some free run today.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice of you.
No, very nice of them to keep me, because I wouldn't pass tech, so then,
right.
Yeah, no, it saved me big time. But, yeah, we found some bodywork. Jeff Williams tracked some down in Orlando last night, and they went and picked it up, and actually they painted it today. So, yeah, we're just fitting the stuff there now.
So even though this is your first time here racing, you were here last year helping Ben on that project. Is there anything you learned through that process, maybe on the other side of the pit wall, that you've taken into this one that you found helpful? Or are you completely going in blind like everyone else here?
Well, yeah, last year didn't go quite as planned. So like the prep, like we tried to have everything dialed in. And here we are. We're kind of throwing in it just like last year, which we didn't think we'd be chasing our back foot. But yeah, the prep is huge, and just when you think you have everything dialed in, here we are.
What's the best way to get up to speed for you in such a short period of time? Because the on-track stuff of day one is done. And then what I find so intriguing, and this is my first time being here, so I'm crash coursing in this, is even when we were talking about what do we want to do for these podcast episodes? Like, how do we possibly make it worth the while to come all the way down to Daytona in order to get enough to tell people what's going on with our CSPK riders down here at Daytona? And I said to Cam and Colin, guys, if we don't get stuff done on Thursday, all of a sudden it's Friday.
Yeah.
Once you get through Friday, it's almost right. Then it's race day. And then it's over. Like, it's a 3-day sprint is what it feels like here at the track. So how do you, I guess, mentally try to realize that, okay, we need to maximize as much time as we possibly can by not talking to idiots like us and get things done in order to give you a chance to have fun and have success?
Yeah, it's like making lists and stuff and trying to check things off as you go, right? It's a lot of, there's so much to it. And if you don't have everything on a list or make a list and to-do list, you will forget stuff. But it's been good helping Ben last year. And then he's been great. Like even him and Jeff Williams just kind of coaching me along, things to look out for, do this, do that, don't do that kind of thing, which is helped huge.
We've talked about the challenging parts of it. I want to ask you about the fun of it, because the reality is this is cool, man. Like, this is an incredible experience and opportunity for you. What is your favorite part of the track from the 18 laps that you got today where, it might be challenging, it might be, something that you've never done before, but there's got to be something about this kind of magical place where you're looking back at it after the first day and going, damn, that was cool.
It's probably how close you are to the wall, being tapped out in sixth gear and that close to the wall. And coming through the tri-oval where the RPMs kind of like hold, and then when you flatten out again, they start climbing again, which is pretty cool. It's just quite a spot for sure.
One thing for me, you've had the last couple of years, I guess it's fair to say, some injuries and some bad luck. It's easy to forget sometimes that you were a very dominant amateur rider, and there was a lot of hype coming into you as a pro. Now it's a completely different environment. You don't have those CSBK sort of expectations. What's your expectation? What's your goal or sort of chip on your shoulder coming into this event?
To be honest, we all come here to win, but you have to be realistic too, right? Look at the people we're accompanied by. But have fun, do the best I can. And at the start of it, we were like, oh, maybe top 10 would be great, right? And then you just another entry, and people coming from overseas, and we're just going to make the best and see where we come up. But have the fun while we're doing it.
Who did you run with today that you found interesting? Anybody jump out that you saw on track and you kind of went, oh, okay?
Be honest, any of the guys I was with, I don't know any of them. To be honest, I tried the first session to go out with Tremblay.
Yep.
That lasted about 3/4 of a lap. And then we got into some traffic, and he's up to speed because he's been here or whatever. But I didn't get out with the right group either. Like, I tried on the second session to get out with Tremblay and Sam Grant, but just everyone was at that start grid, and then everyone took off together or pass or whatever, and it took a bit to get around some of the slower guys. But it's pretty neat, the draft, though. There's a lot to learn there for sure.
It's incredible to watch as well, because if I'm standing between turns 3 and 4 essentially, and on the top of a grandstand, and I see, for example, in the quality session today, I saw Sear and Tremblay tagging up.
Yeah.
And, you can see Tremblay kind of letting Sear go past, headed down into 6. And then it's like, okay, here we go. And it is a hell of a slingshot, man. Like, and watching Tremblay go, and he picks that up. But it's incredible, right? Because we've talked about, the drafting a lot with you guys today and in the lead up to this, but you can have a guy who gets the draft, fires his way around, and then the new guy who's in behind almost immediately re-grabs the draft, and it's almost like immediately sucking him back in. And that's what we've seen in finishes, right, Cam, as well as like with Brandon Pasch, where it's like you're waiting and you're switching and it's back and forth, and it's almost like a football game where it's like, well, who has the football last? Basketball game, who gets to touch the basketball? It's like that way of drafting I don't know how you wrap your head around the mind games of it, of when you know you need to push and when you know you need to be sitting there right behind the guy.
Yeah, the timing is everything, right? And what that timing is, you never know, right? A couple of times where I got beside guys or coming up on them hard, you get out on the outside and it's almost like you might go by them 15 feet and then it's just like you hit a wall. Just that draft is gone, right? And it's, like you said, I think it's like watching Duhamel when I was a kid and stuff, do all the drafting. It's timing and it's probably a little bit of luck too coming out of that back chicane and getting the right drive and timing it all right.
So obviously this is a question that we could ask of anybody in this paddock, but for you specifically, this is an endurance race, which is not something that we do regularly in Canada. What has been your training, physical, mental, mechanical, you know, all the elements that go into it preparing for a 57-lap race instead of 16?
First of all, you're shredded. Let's just say that. So it's obviously whatever you've been doing, congratulations.
Yeah, that's another thank you to Ben Young, too. I've always worked out, but it's this year we used to do a ton of rowing.
Yeah.
And trying to lose weight to just, you know, for the high-speed stuff. But honestly, it's a lot more biking and running. Obviously, you know, CrossFit stuff here and there too, but no big weights and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, a lot of it's just all, most of it's cardio.
Yeah.
And what I'm eating.
Just a grind, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I stopped drinking at New Year's Eve and no sugar, and it I've lost a bunch of weight, but it's you know, like you said, it's been a grind.
That's awesome. Well, it's worked, as I said, so congratulations on all of the preparations going into this. We'll let you go because I know you guys are working on all sorts of different things and get back in there, but congratulations on a successful first day and continued success here over the next couple.
Perfect. Thanks, awesome. Guys. Thanks for having me.